In 1987, the US mental illness disability rate was one in every 184 Americans. But by the year 2007, the mental illness disability rate had more than doubled to one in every 76 Americans. Author and medical journalist Robert Whittaker was curious as to what was causing this dramatic increase in mental illness disability, and it led him to write Anatomy of an Epidemic. In it, he raised a startling question. Could psychiatric drugs be fueling an epidemic of mental illness? Now, Robert Whittaker is due to speak at the Edmund Burke Theatre and the Arts Building at Trinity College Dublin at 2 o'clock on Saturday, and also at the D4 Barclay Court on Wednesday evening, the 2nd of March, at 7:30. He'll also be speaking in Athlone and Cork. And Bob Whittaker is with me now. I'm also joined by Patricia Casey, Professor of Psychiatry at the Department of Psychiatry at UCD and the Mater Misericordiae Hospital. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Bob, first of all, the statistic, it appears quite remarkable. What alerted you to this, and how did you develop your thesis?
Well, you know, we have been in the United States a sense that mental illness is becoming ever more a topic, and you get more, you know, more and more people are being diagnosed, and in fact, you do learn about more and more people going on disability. So it seems like psychiatric problems are growing in our society. It's becoming ever more prominent. So I just wanted to know, well, why is this so? Because we are using medications more and more. For example, our spending on psychiatric drugs went from $800 million in 1987 to more than $40 billion in 2007. So I said, well, I'll look at the disability numbers as a marker for how well this paradigm of care is working for us as a society. Because, of course, if it's working well, we're getting more people treated, we should see a decline in disability rates, or at least they should stay stable.
So this is not simply about diagnosis of people with a condition. You're talking about people who are now no longer able to function as they once had in society. This is about disability rather than simply diagnosis.
Yeah, exactly. This is a measure of, these are people who've gone on government disability, getting government checks because they can no longer work. So we went from 1.25 million adults in 1987 to more than 4 million adults in 2007. There's 850 adults going on disability every day in the United States due to mental illness. So you can see we have a societal problem that needs to be investigated.
Now, first of all, there are a number of things. I mentioned diagnosis. That,
right.
You know, in the past, maybe diagnosis wasn't as good, so people didn't get labeled. They just muddled through their lives with a lot of difficulty.
Right.
That's the first thing. And the second thing is that life has become more stressful. There are more challenges on people, so maybe more people are getting sick.
Sure. I mean, I think those are both possibilities, absolutely. But then the question is this paradigm of care we have, that it emphasizes medications as a first response and emphasizes medications over the long term, is that a good solution? Is that a good response to this additional stress?
You looked at other countries, and particularly third world countries, where they seem to have paradoxically better results than the United States.
Yeah, this actually was one of my first entries into this. The World Health Organization, this goes back to the 1970s, did two outcome studies comparing outcomes for schizophrenia patients in three developing countries, India, Colombia, and Nigeria, to seven rich countries, U.S. and six other rich countries. And they concluded that the outcomes were much, much better in those poor countries. And they concluded this, that living in a developed country is a strong predictor that you will never fully recover from schizophrenia. And I wondered, why would that be?
All right. Your thesis is that for some people, not for all, that for some people, that the drugs themselves are causing the problem.
That's correct.
So now, how did you reach that conclusion?
Well,
because clearly some of these antipsychotic drugs do work for people.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's complicated. So do I believe that the medications often work over the short term? Absolutely. Do I believe that many people are helped by them for the long term? Absolutely. But what you find when you look at the long-term outcomes literature and you look at how they shape outcomes in the aggregate, you get a very different picture. And what you see, for example, is that recovery rates for medicated patients are often less than for unmedicated patients. That's one thing. Then you also have the problem that, let's say you have someone with an initial bout of depression, a milder problem, there will be a significant percentage of people who will have a manic episode in response to the antidepressant. They will get a bipolar diagnosis, and now they're into a much more severe category. So if you look at the literature, you really have two problems. In the aggregate, it's clear that many people would do better long-term off medication. And I can give you a very specific study that just came out on this. And two, we have this problem that some people with a milder problem have a bad reaction to the drug and go on to a more serious category. So it's two different things.
All right, you want to give us a particular example?
Yeah, we had a long study done by Martin Harrell, done by the National Institute of Mental Health. It followed 145 patients with psychotic disorders beginning in 1980. It's a 15-year outcome study, and here's what he found. It was really surprising. He found that the recovery rate for schizophrenia patients at the end of 15 years off medication was 40%. Over half were working. The recovery rate for those on medication was 5%. So that was an eightfold higher recovery rate for those off medication. And in the 2008 American Psychiatric Association meeting, he said, "I conclude that patients with psychotic disorders off antipsychotic medication have better long-term disorders." Can I say one last thing?
Yeah.
That does not mean that there aren't people who benefit from antipsychotics long-term.
How do you choose then between
them? That's the question.
All right. Patricia Casey, what about the overall thesis that people who are on these antipsychotic medications and other antidepressants and so on, they may never get better simply because they're on the medicines that were supposed to do that for them?
I think that's a completely fallacious argument, and there's absolutely no evidence whatsoever to support it. The one thing that I do agree with Rob about is the overuse of antidepressants in cases of mild depression and people who are experiencing just life stresses. Many of those people are now medicated, and I do not think that should happen. But with regard to antipsychotics...
Do people become dependent upon those drugs?
Well, they become psychologically dependent.
That's
There's
I mean,
no evidence of physical dependence.
But they become psychologically
dependent. They do, and clinically, as a clinician, I spend a lot of time trying to take people off those medications, and they don't want to because they need a prop. And if awful things are happening in their lives, they say, well, I need that as a prop. I really can't do without it. Now isn't the time. When in fact they're not deriving any clinical benefit from it, but they're becoming a bigger group. But to come back to the core of the thesis, which is that for people with biological illnesses, with bipolar disorder, with schizophrenia, or with severe depression, that these medications are depressogenic. There is absolutely no evidence whatsoever to support that. And for
that idea that someone is given an antidepressant because they have depression, mild depression, they then have an episode of mania. And they end up.
Well, that's quite
uncommon.
Euphoria. I have to say that is quite uncommon. It is documented that some antidepressants can in patients cause mania, but these are people who would be vulnerable to it in the first place.
The statistics, though, the number of people in the United States and the amount of money that's been spent on drugs. Maybe two and two doesn't make four, but the two statistics appear to be quite startling, from $800 million to, what is it,
more than $40 billion.
$40 billion.
Well, a lot of that would be spent on antidepressants, I believe, based on some epidemiological studies that show that there's this sort of huge epidemic of depression in America. I don't believe there is a huge epidemic anywhere. I think that the problem is the concept of depression has now become so broad that all you need are five symptoms for two weeks.
But in terms of the people picking up disability checks, which is what Rob was talking about, I mean, that is a real cost to the American economy. If it's replicated here, the same could be true, that people are unnecessarily sick, costing money on drugs, and also costing money on disability.
Well, we need to know what the diagnosis of the people receiving these is. Is it PTSD, for example?
What's that?
Have been post-traumatic stress disorder. Yeah. There have been a series of wars involving, at this stage, hundreds of thousands of veterans who are coming back traumatised and claiming disability. America is also, I suppose, a mercenary society, and it's tempting to think that there may be some false claims. And I know that that has been a concern of the Veterans
Administration. But is there a concern that the drug companies may be pushing their products and encouraging doctors to keep patients on products longer than they need to? So therefore, as long as you're on the drug, you're not going to be going to work. Therefore, you're on disability. Therefore.
Well, I would hope that clinicians have enough morality to know when to stop medication and when not to.
Right. Can I say it's not just a problem in the United States? So, for example, in Iceland, they embraced antidepressants around 1995. The number of people going on disability in Iceland has tripled since then each year. In Britain, in UK, for example, the number of days lost to mental illness, in other words, days of incapacity, tripled between 1985 and 1995. You're seeing in every country that adopts this paradigm of care, where drugs become the cornerstone of care, increased disability rates. It's not just the U.S. And two things here. I think one thing is really important here is This book, Anatomy of an Epidemic, is really looking at the evidence. It's an evidence-based book. So, for example, she said that it's just fallacious that any idea that antipsychotics might be problematic long-term. Go back to that World Health Organization study. They looked at medication usage. You know what they found? They found that in the poor countries where outcomes were so much better, only 16% of patients were regularly maintained on drugs, whereas in the U.S., this was the and the other rich countries, that was the paradigm of care.
I actually read that study, and I know the main author of it, and They didn't postulate that it was medication was causing that. They actually couldn't understand why it was that the outcome was so different. They could not figure it out. Medication didn't enter into it. One thing they did speculate about.
But why not? If it was a different factor in the, obviously based on the economies of the
other developing countries. Other studies have not replicated that finding, in fact. And what the authors, one of the things the authors speculated on was that it was due to the cause of the psychotic breakdowns in these countries. Many of them were infective due to malnutrition, due to toxic substances. They speculated that that might be one, and that was why they had a better prognosis and resolved spontaneously without antipsychotics.
Talk to me, Rob, about what you learned about teenagers and what's happening to teenagers and other young people in the United States.
We have a huge problem with this because in the United States we are pathologizing, you know, childhood in a remarkable way. We are now medicating more than 10% of our youth in the United States. And, for example, the number of children now going on disability prior to age 18, that has risen from 16,200 children.
And what are the diagnoses?
ADHD, it's bipolar diagnoses now. So, for example, we're getting a lot of juvenile bipolar diagnoses. Before 1995, you never saw this. But that's what we're getting, a lot of bipolar diagnoses.
And what is your thesis suggesting about the reason for that increase in bipolar?
That's clearly partly a commercially driven thing. So, for example, the atypical antipsychotics came to market in the 1990s. The makers of those drugs wanted to expand the market for those drugs. They gave money to a doctor at Massachusetts General Hospital named Joseph Biederman, over $2 million, and he became the guy to sort of validate this new diagnosis. And if you look at the documents, he says to the pharmaceutical company, I will validate this diagnosis. I will teach doctors to use this new diagnosis, and I will teach them that they have to use your atypical antipsychotics for life. $2.6 million.
And what were they to use it for? I mean,
for this new diagnosis of juvenile bipolar diagnosis. And he was being questioned by an attorney. He said, how did you come up with this new diagnosis? And he basically said, I conceived of it. I reconceived of, quote, oppositional defiant disorder, which is sort of this kids not behaving, into bipolar disorder. So it was this subjective thing. So it's not like there's a biological marker for juvenile bipolar disorder.
I mean, I would be horrified if that happened. I mean, I do not think we should be medicating children in that way unless they have serious
ADHD. Rebellious teen. Those two words go together. It's what life is like.
But that's not a problem of medication. The problem is that these diagnoses are being fabricated by the American Psychiatric Association. And that's the problem. They are the body that every few years brings out a glossary of diagnostic categories and criteria.
So they're medicalizing human behavior.
And they are medicalizing them. And certainly, I would agree, oppositional defiant disorder comes into that category. But these categories come and go. There's a new addition to
it. It sounds to me, Patricia, that this is the kind of thing you do it because you go to the court and, yes, Judge, I'm afraid I've diagnosed my young friend here as having
oppositional. But that is not the nub of Rob's thesis. Rob's thesis is that people with schizophrenia get worse on medication, that people with bipolar disorder do worse on medication. And in fact, I mean, I was reading some of the solutions that Rob came up with, and one was a therapy called Open Dialogue, which was used in Lapland in 2006. Now, I looked at the evidence base for that therapy. I could only find three papers on that therapy that Rob speaks so highly of. One of them was in Norwegian. One was a review of the therapy, and the other was a study that was not a randomized controlled trial. So some of the solutions that Rob is coming up with, in my opinion, are likely to be as dangerous as what he believes the problem itself is.
Well, in Western Lapland, I mean, there's many, many papers that you can find. And in 1992, they began using antipsychotics in a very different manner, a much more selective manner. And I think this is important. And I'm not saying that nobody benefits from antipsychotics. I think what you need to have is a protocol to figure out for whom and for how long. And that's what they did in Western Lapland. And what they found is with their newly episodic, their first episode psychotic patients, they don't put them on antipsychotics. They wait to see if some people can get better without the drug. So they don't go down that drug
Patricia,
path.
Is that a sensible approach, that you don't medicate straight away?
In an ideal world, you would wait. I wait a few days before I medicate people, if I can. But when you have somebody who's acutely psychotic, very disturbed, whose parents are wanting the person treated immediately, you cannot afford to wait for several weeks before you medicate them.
People who might be harmful to themselves and to others.
To themselves or to others. Their education might be affected. Their livelihood might be at stake. And there is evidence that the duration of untreated psychosis is a prognostic indicator.
Can I bring in some of the comments here? From Anne Ryan in Kilkenny, the Mental Health Commission report has just been published here. Very critical of over-medicating patients in psychiatric hospitals. Appears this report got no
benzodiazepines.
Yeah, no response so far from the Department of Health, according to Anne. Another one says, drugs cause more problems than they solve. I'm a mental patient, says one. It's an anonymous call. Side effects from psychiatric drugs affect some people more than they do others. These side effects can only be observed when just one drug is prescribed. But this approach is rarely adopted in psychiatric hospitals, which reduces treatment to guesswork. That's from Pat and Dublin. That is a problem, that if you have a cocktail of drugs, knowing what's causing what or what's to... You know, you really have to try and do it one by one.
Absolutely. In an ideal world, we would use monotherapy all the time. That isn't possible sometimes. If, for example, you have somebody who is profoundly depressed and they're not sleeping, the antidepressant will not help their sleep initially, so you have to give them a hypnotic until the antidepressant becomes effective. But remember, when we're talking about hospitals and people being in hospitals, we are talking about very severely ill people. Another point that I think in relation to hospitalisation is important. In 1960, there were 20,000 long-stay patients in Ireland in our hospitals. Because of the advent of various medications, that has been slashed. We now, between long-stay and acute patients, have less than 3,000 at any one time. So medications have caused our psychiatric hospitals to be pulled down and patients to be discharged.
But do you accept that we may be talking about two different apples and oranges here, that in Ireland they're not doing what Rob is saying they're doing in the United States?
That's highly likely, I think, particularly with children. I think
with children this is true.
And ADHD is something you're hot on as well, that there's suddenly an epidemic of it, which is then treated with drugs.
Treated with stimulants, and there's a certain percentage of kids treated with ADHD that have a bad reaction. They become sort of bipolar patients, and it leads people to sort of this life as a chronic mental patient. I will give you a warning. We're pretty good at exporting psychiatry from American and our values. You can be sure we're going to try to export medicating kids real soon, so watch that come to Ireland.
One last word here talking about that. My daughter had trouble going to school. School refusal, so-called. My wife went to the GP and came back with a prescription for Lustral.
It's an antidepressant.
Yeah, that seems bizarre.
Absolutely.
Well, there you go.
I wouldn't use it.
Are you going to be challenged, do you think, Rob, on your visit? I mean, is it a debate, a dialogue?
You know, my whole point with this book was to hopefully stir discussion of this and look at the long-term outcomes literature. I mean, you can see for societies these rising disability rates have to be addressed. I will say one thing that has happened in the United States. The book actually has occasioned a conference 2 weeks ago that was led by psychiatrists that started writing new protocols for the use of antidepressants and for the use of antipsychotics. So it is stirring a good
worthy
discussion.
Patricia.
Absolutely, and I would greatly value a change in our use of antidepressants. In fact, in the UK, the NICE guidelines have altered their prescribing guidelines and they recommend watchful waiting initially.
All right, look, thank you both for a very interesting discussion.
Can I add one thing?
Yes.
Just, I was told to say this 7:30 p.m. Ballsbridge Inn on Wednesday. I'll be speaking and they're really urging professionals to come out because it will be this story of evidence-based reviewing.
The D4 Barclay Court.
Exactly. Thank you very much for having us.
All right, Rob, thank you very much. I'm Patricia Casey. Great having you on the program once again.